The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. We have our guest in the studio today. His name is Dave Miller. He's with the Thumb Chapter of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. And while the Rocky Mountains may be out west, the foundation is all the way into Michigan because we do have elk here in the state, and it's part of their effort to promote and keep the elk herds healthy throughout the country. Thanks for being with us. Elk is something that was brought back to Michigan just over 100 years ago, as I understand it.
Right.
We lost it. We cleared them all out, and we had to bring them back.
Yeah. Well, this past year was the 100th anniversary. It was quite a big event up in Gaylord up there. They had all kinds of people coming in and all kinds of things going on, just commemorated.
And for anyone who doesn't know what an elk is, it's like a deer on super steroids. It is huge. It has a big rack, and you think hitting a deer in your car is bad? Do not want to hit an elk. They're basically, though, in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula. There's kind of like a sweet spot in the state for their habitat.
Yeah, the elk range is up in the Atlanta, Gaylord, up in that area. That's where primarily you'll see the elk in Michigan.
And what makes for prime land for elk? I mean, do they need some open space? I mean, they got the big racks. I would think running through the woods would be kind of like running through a china shop with a broom handle in your hand. It would be difficult to navigate at best.
Yeah, well, the DNR, they like to maintain them elk, try to keep them in that elk range, so there's openings that they maintain in there to draw the elk in, to forage in, you know, so they've
created habitat,
right,
for them, prime habitat.
Yeah.
that they will stick around because there's food and there's a good place to bed and do all the other things they do.
Yeah, well, and then they don't want them elk getting, when they get down to the farther south end of the elk range and they get into the agriculture
and the
land down there.
And, and the bigger traffic. I'm sorry. I keep thinking of the deer accidents because, man, those things are big. And they're both big, not just the bull elk, but the does are quite large, too.
Oh, yeah, they're...
They're nothing to take lightly.
They could do a lot of damage if you run into one with a car, that's for sure.
Are they aggressive out in the field, or only maybe during the mating season when their brains are a little scrambled?
Probably they're more aggressive, you know, in the mating season, like pretty much like the deer are, you know, when they get the mate.
Similar type of mating season in the fall, and then you have the
right,
young ones in the spring, so you've got the whole nice summer to let them grow and be ready for the winter coming.
Right, pretty much. Yep.
Okay. Now, part of what you do is fundraising, and you have one coming up Saturday.
Yep, we do at Ubley Heights Golf and Country Club there. That's a fundraiser. We've been doing it now. This is the 23rd year that we've held a banquet. So.
And you told me last year you had 150 or so people attend. That's a pretty good turnout. I mean, you do cover the whole thumb, but these are people particularly interested in elk, which really isn't in our area, just here in the state, and something that people have worked hard to bring back and preserve.
I think a lot of that's true, but a lot of people's just, interested in wildlife habitat. You know, what we do for elk, it helps every critter in that range. You know, it helps the small critters and the deer that's out in that range as well. So,
well, they were here before they were reintroduced, so basically they were part of our ecosystem
at one
time, when,
right,
and they were eliminated, which probably changed things, and now having them back in that area probably is getting more back into balance again.
Well, yeah, just like we was talking just a few minutes ago there about a story back in the 1800s where two guys made an elk hunt, and they went from the Cass River to Elk Creek, and it took them a couple weeks, you know, and you think today, no time at all, you're there, but it was on foot, and it was kind of an interesting story to realize, you know.
But when you go that far back, people forget there are no expressways, no real paved roads. There was, you know, it was a trip, yeah, right, just to get to the next town, let alone go far enough to find some elk.
Yeah, that was back in the days before roads, and you know, it was more trails
buggies and wagons and such, because you're going back before cars and everything else there.
Yeah. So,
but that's how much people were willing to go to hunt elk.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that was, you know, back in them days, you know, you didn't have a grocery store on every corner, or, you know, you pretty much
looked. But if you go that far, you got to bring it home.
Well, yeah.
And that's no small feat either, because, you know, you got to keep it cold. There wasn't refrigeration, everything else. You got to get it back in time. But we're talking a bit about your upcoming event. There's a lot of things going on at Ubley Heights Country Club Saturday. When does it get started?
It gets started at 5 o'clock. The doors open, and then we'll...
What happens at 5? A little meet-and-greet type of thing where people can get to know each other and see what's maybe on for some of the other events later in the evening?
Yeah, well, our live auction is open, or silent auction starts at right then, and our raffles...
Oh, so you can go look around and see what you want to bid on, and... Keep going back to see if somebody put more on the bid, so you got to go back and up your bid a little bit.
But then we, you know, after the silent auction and raffles, there's all kinds of raffles. There's table raffles and a number of raffles that you can take part in. And then our dinner, we always like to get started right on time for our dinner, and that's at 7 o'clock.
You can call me anything, but don't call me late for dinner.
Right, that's it. And then we want to get our live auction right on schedule to start at 8, so we like to keep the evening moving right along. And
but it isn't a late evening. You get the auction, and then you've got a little bit at the end, and so it's a nice dinner evening out.
It is, and we have a nice crowd. We have a mixed crowd, you know. We have guys and gals and kids, and so... We'll try to have a little bit of something for everybody that's interested in, you know, on our auctions and raffles and so.
Now, the auctions and raffles, I assume, are part of the fundraiser.
Right.
The funds are raised. Some of it stays right here in the state for state habitat and programs?
Right. 50% of the net dollars that we raise stays here in the state of Michigan to do work right here in Michigan. We, the DNR will come to us with a project that they'd like to fund, and
they see if you can help out, you know, whether they need help with buying seed or something to reseed a meadow or something to make it better foraging grounds and such. You will be able to help them out a bit.
Right, they do things like prescribed burns or
just like they do locally here at the Verona game area and other places, state game areas, where they do some controlled burns. Makes the habitat better for the animals in the wooded areas.
Yeah, and they got a project coming up where they'll plant some in one of these openings. They're going to plant some of these apple trees, but then when they plant them, they have to fence them.
So they have a chance to become tall apple trees before they're munched down.
And it's like so that's a project that they like help with, and then on usually. In September, we have a volunteer, rendezvous, and it's usually a work day up there, and they'll have some project that they'd like,
So it's not just monetary. There are people in the organization that get down and gritty and do the labor work as well to make this happen.
Yeah, they'll.
Sometimes you can't put a good price on that because you get enough people there, it would be prohibitive to pay them all.
Yeah, one year they took down an old building. Another year they've taken down barbed wire. And another year they helped plant trees. And so there's always something that they come along and say, some little project.
These are things that the DNR officers will spot out in the woods and such that they're thinking is maybe a hindrance or a possible danger, like the barbed wire, they could get injured and you don't need that. So they find these things and probably jot it down and then come the end of the season, they're looking for help to get this done before this kind of weather sets in.
Well, there's no, that barbed wire is a hindrance to all the animals. You know, that old barbed wire that's strung around and over the years, it's just...
And they make sure that it isn't part of anybody's field. It's just, it was there a long ago, well, and it didn't get taken down when whoever stopped doing anything in that area left.
Right. And it's maybe on some of it was on some of the property that was purchased. And
As they keep building out the areas and make it bigger, they buy the land up, and they may have been some fence rows or something left in.
Yeah. In Michigan, you don't have the...
The things you want to rust away don't. Your car will do it in 2 years.
You don't have the land, the big land acquisitions, you know, that they do, you know, in the West, where, and they do a lot of, they'll find a lot of conservation easements there, because a lot of that land is privately owned, but the elk will come into them areas in the spring, and they'll have their calves in there, or it's a corridor they use to move from the winter range to the summer range. And there's always a lot of development going on, and they always want, you know, they want to be up on them slopes where they can look out across. But
most animals like a good vantage point. They want to see if anything's coming for them, or if there's something better down the trail to eat.
Well, the landowners, you know, they'll want to keep that land. They don't want to sell that land off to be developed.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll step in and do a conservation easement on that land and buy that easement. And that way, that land is protected forever because it goes right on the deed. It can still be ranched or farmed.
But it can't be
sold for the development.
It cannot be condos.
Well, so that's kind of the way you protect it for down the road for everybody.
Now, this fundraiser, is this one of several around the state? We have the Thumb area, Rocky Mountain. Is there the Southeast? Is there the Southwest, the Northeast, Michigan, Rocky Mountain Foundation groups? Are there more around the states?
Yes.
They're doing this?
Yes, there's 16 different chapters in the state.
So it's not just your fundraising, it's all of these that come in, and 50% of that goes to the DNR to try and preserve habitat make it better.
Yeah. It's used, you know, for in the state, some of it's used, you know, to promote, you know, some of the projects and education, but it's still a nice chunk of money to be used here in the state.
The DNR would want a group that's interested in certain, whether it's ducks or it's elk or deer, that want to help out. They're more than happy to partner with them enough to get some good things done.
Yeah, well, I guess we've been at, in the last 22 years, our banquet loan, we've raised more than $574,000. So you take half of that, stayed right here in the state of Michigan to be used.
So far, through all these years, you've donated about $250,000.
Yeah.
To the Habitat, and that's just this one group.
Yeah.
There are others around the state, so that goes a long way.
Yeah, so half of that money stayed here. So that's
do they work to try and contain them to that area? I mean, animals have this natural instinct to spread. I mean, trying to contain nature is like trying to herd cats. It isn't going to happen. They want to move. They want to find new grounds. And this may be prime territory that we're making for them, but do they get further out than that? And sometimes it seems to me, if I remember, they had hunts for areas outside the prime area because of the problems they can cause.
Well, when they get down there in that towards that ag country, they
can eat a lot.
Well, yeah, and that's why they want to, you know, keep those new openings, keep them up, so there's feed there for them, and they'll gravitate to there instead of down into that. And then when they come to looking at their number of animals that they want to harvest that year, they'll look at them. You know, if they're having a lot of problems on that lower range, they'll take more animals out of that area. So
that's a major plan in containing the spread, is because overcrowding tends to push people out, or deer or elk out. Yeah. And any animal would do that. But if you contain the numbers to an area that has sufficient resources, they probably be more than happy to stay there.
Well, this January, they do their survey, and they do that by flying two planes for 2 days, and each plane's got two spotters, and they count the elk that, and that's what they set, you know, their harvest quotas by, and
so they determine how many licenses will be available in the next hunting season based upon what they see from the air.
Right, and then they've collared some animals too to see where they will move, you know, in that range from
the, well, from the summer to the fall to the winter, there's probably different grounds with different things they can eat and keep themselves going.
Yeah.
And I imagine spring, summer, and early fall, they're looking to fatten themselves up because it's pretty lean in our Michigan winters in finding anything green and succulent to eat.
Well, I have a little trouble, you know, idea kind of looking out for myself in the fall, you know.
But then again, you've got a freezer and a fridge. And a grocery store to go get stuff. They just basically have to find what's out there. And again,
yep.
The habitat you folks work to maintain and to make better helps in that regard. Do they monitor like mortality rates for the young ones? Because I know there are certain parts of the state, the UP especially, they kind of look out for these kind of things because they can have some really harsh weather up there, and you know, the young ones in their first season, they're more at risk than when they get a little bigger and they've got a little experience under their horns.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job of monitoring, you know, what.
Because they're the future.
Right.
I mean, the ones that you have now, they're eventually either going to be harvested or of old age are going to be gone, and you need the young, healthy new ones to replace those numbers.
Yeah.
Did they bring enough for a viable herd? Because you can't do too much inbreeding with just a pair or something. They must have brought in enough initially that they could, you know, realize they're going to have, you know, a long-term positive effect. I would think that would be like the basic planning.
Yeah, I think when the first was brought in, I think there was seven that they started out with, and then
they checked to make sure they're going to make it.
Yeah,
and you don't want to bring in a whole bunch, and because that's expensive and you're taking it from somewhere else. But if they're able to thrive, then you know you can keep going.
And then there's a few years down the road they brought some more in, but I don't exactly remember, you know, what the number was. But they basically, that group is, you know,
family.
Give us the elk herd we got now.
What is the expression? They're 7 degrees of separation between them all, or something. They probably all have a common great grandfather somewhere. But that was the point, was to make them thrive, be both healthy, short-term and long-term.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of right anyway. It was 1918 when they brought seven elk in. And by 1939, it was 400.
Well,
so
they put rabbits to shame. Big rabbits with horns. These bull elk, they're the only ones that get a horn? Do the females not, like deer, or do they both get them?
No, just the bulls have
But they
horns.
Do shed them like a deer.
Yep.
So out in the northern woods, people can come across these things, and they're quite obvious what they are.
Well, yeah, there's no thinking they're deer. They're big enough that they know right away that they came off an elk.
Now, are there rules about if you find them you keep them, or do you need to go to the DNR so that they can look them over, register them, you see? Because they always are looking to check the health of the herd, and I understand that's one way to do it.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that you can pick up sheds.
But it might be nice to stop by the DNR and just show them what you got so they have an idea just how well they're doing.
And if you got any question about you, nice. Stop by the DNR office and
they may be
them,
able to look at it, give you an idea of how old the deer is, or the elk, excuse me. I keep calling them deer, but there's quite a difference there. But they can probably give you an idea, well, this isn't a two-year-old buck. This one's been around a while because of the size and the shape of it. I mean, I'm sure there's techniques to this that go way beyond my knowledge of any of this.
Yeah, well, and too, when they have their hunting season, you know, and they... Those when they bring them in and they check them then to get a little information off them, to it helps them, you know, to see what shape they're in
and see if they have one of those collars on or something that they try to track a few of them with to see where they're going. Terrific. And it's typical, like a deer, mate in the spring or mate in the fall. Over the winter the calf grows, and in the spring when all the stuff comes out and there's all this feed around, that's when the calf can be born and gets a whole season and a half to grow and thrive until it's winter. Just like deer.
Yep, just like deer. Yep.
It's a pattern that works. Let's not mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what kind of you're going back to your auction here? What kind of items do you have? Are a lot of them sportsman type? I mean, do you have like prints of maybe elk or other animals and natural pictures like that? Or I think you mentioned, we were talking a little bit before the show, that you have some special items or maybe a firearm or something in that. What kind of items, if people wanted to bid on, would they likely find?
Oh, we have a nice glider rocker. We got some prints. Wildlife sculptures, jewelry.
These are donated, for the most part.
A lot of it's donated, and there's pretty much something for everybody on that raffle up there.
You said there were gift baskets. Remember, a lot of people put those together, and they're fun to take home and give you something you brought back from your evening out.
Yeah, we have. Well, six items that we are, some of them are gift baskets that we call a key item. And so anybody who buys one of them at the end of the auction will get to pick a key out of a box. And if their key opens a lock on, we usually have a firearm, a nice gun. And if their key opens that lock, then they'll get that firearm.
So even if you buy one of the smaller gift items in the auction, or even the silent auction, or just basically
it's
the
just on the just live auction. And it's just those six items.
But there's six special ones. Do you know that going in?
You know that going in. Everybody knows.
So you can raise the price up a little bit when people know there could be a little extra on the end of this ticket.
Well, that's why you put a nice gun there that everybody would rather have, you know, so that kind of helps the price of the auction item.
Yeah. And do you have a real auctioneer come in and do this?
Oh, yes. We have. Our auctioneer has been with us all these years. Jim O'Connor. He's a great auctioneer. He has a lot of fun doing it, and he knows most of the people in the crowd anymore. He's been
one of those fast talkers, huh?
Yeah, he has a good time doing it, and we sure appreciate, you know, him donating his time for us too, because he's stuck with us for all these years.
Well, I'm sure it's an event that he probably enjoys too. I mean, people are having fun. You know, it's unlike an auction where maybe you're selling somebody's farm off and they're sad that, you know, it's coming. This is a fun event. People are having a good time, and you just add to it.
Yeah, we have a silent auction too, where people can kind of go at their own pace and enjoy.
And basically, there's the item and maybe a sheet in front of it,
right,
and then you sign your name and your bid, and you keep going back to see if anybody has outbid you, and if you want to up your bid, you can do so.
And if you got the last bid, and
which you told me is usually just about the start of the live auction,
right?
You stop the silent auction.
That's correct.
And you are winner there, and Your bid is accepted.
Right. We have a lot of raffles all through the, you know, the night there. We have some really nice stuff on our raffles, and people seem to enjoy it, and they keep coming back, and we're awful thankful that they do. And
so if you are there for the first time and you don't know diddly about anything, is it cash, check, credit card? How do you, because I'm sure you're going to want to at least get your kind of payment at, before someone walks out the door with it. So is it, what do you need to bring?
Oh, we, you know, cash, check, credit cards.
All of those, all of the above will work.
All the above will work, yeah.
Because, okay. So. You know, some people don't like to carry a lot of cash, but if you have the other availabilities, they'll use them as well.
And we still, you know, we'll still have tickets available now.
And how do they get tickets now if they want them?
They can really call Alicia Geiger, and that's 989-600-8273.
And one more time.
It's 989-600-8273.
And they're all individual tickets. If two are coming, you get two individual tickets. There's no couples or anything like that.
Well, there's a number of different items on our banquet. So if they call, you can go right down. She can give you what your options are.
Oh, okay.
And people can still, they can still go online and buy them right online.
And is there an easy way to do it? You go to the area Rocky Mountain, and then away it goes? Or?
You just go rmef.org/shop/Michigan Thumb.
That'll take you to the web page, and that'll show you what you need
right,
to know.
Then you can walk yourself right through it. Pretty easy. Not anymore.
You do want to make it easy.
Right.
Well, terrific. I hope you get another good turnout. Like you said, you had 150 last year, you told me. That's a pretty good number.
Right.
I mean, I know you're pulling from major three counties of the Thumb, and you said you were down into St. Clair and other people coming in for, as well for it, because it's a good time and a good cause for them.
Right, and a lot of these people, you know, followed us, our banquet, for years, so that's...
And if they're doing that, you've got good food. I have learned that the long way, is that the events that have the best food generally tend to find a good return, because people enjoy that kind of a night out.
And I think we have a lot of fun doing it, and the folks that come, they have fun while they're there, and that's what makes them keep coming back, you know.
I guess I should ask, it is Ubley Heights, so they do have a license. Is this, is the bar open? Is it BYOB, or is it just coffee?
No, the bar's open, yeah.
So you can have that as well.
Right, there's a cash bar, yeah.
So, terrific. So again, that's coming up this Saturday, so you want tickets.
Right.
It's time to get cracking.
Time to go, yeah.
And you do have some seats available
right.
yet. So
don't call Alicia, and she can fix you right up.
Or go to that website, and
right.
They will have the instructions there as how you can do it. Maybe you have to print off the tickets so you go do it, or maybe you folks will have a record of it there and just show their ID.
Yeah, you can print off.
It'll show you what you need to do.
Yeah, you can print off your receipt. So.
There you go.
But.
And all of this is to help benefit the elk in Michigan. Our herd is kind of concentrated north-central part of the Lower Peninsula. You said around the Grayling area, Atlanta, center part of the upper Lower Peninsula, where the habitat's right, and they're far enough away from major agricultural and urban areas to avoid the problems that any such large animal could cause. And it's great to have them back in the state. They've been here for 100 years again. Hopefully we can keep them for another century or two.
Well, and not only just the helps out in Michigan, you know, we help in the big conservation easements and that, and then west and in all the elk states. So that money does good there as well as here.
And and some of it probably for the parent organization, the Unorganized Keep Running and such. I mean, it's not a big ticket item for them, but a lot of this is, much of it is going right to help.
Right, really.
The deer. I keep saying deer, it's elk.
Yeah, the Elk Foundation, they're pretty proud of how they handle people's money, because 96% of it goes right to the mission.
And if there's people, not a lot of
people can check Charity Navigator, and see the rating right on there.
Well, excellent. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Phone number one more time if they want tickets.
989-600-8273.
Right. And we wish you a good turnout and a good raising of funds with the auction so you can help the critters in our area and those out west as well. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news. Our guest today has been Dave Miller from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the Thumb Area chapter, and their event is this Saturday at the Ubley Heights Country Club. Current temperature, by the way, is 16 degrees. WLEW.